Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Hi, everybody. This is Aiden.
Hey, everyone. Sarah here. Today, John is going to talk to us about the 512 Project videos.
Yeah, the 512 Project has a bit of a history. It was done with a lot of intention and a lot of people putting in a lot of love. I would say that the foundation of it started in 1979 when I was researching at Rutgers, and I was doing comparative kind of anthropology, sociology type research around cultural practices from hunter-gatherer nomadic people mostly, but I also looked into my Polish ancestry, my Irish ancestry. And, you know, I was looking for these universal practices and trying to figure out, especially what did the hunter-gatherer nomadic people have in common, and could we learn something from that about helping people to connect more with themselves, with nature, with one another. And in the, you know, traditional regenerative cultures that I studied, they were also looking at, you know, connecting to ancestors, becoming aware that we'll be future ancestors, and therefore thinking about future generations. And I often found that it went beyond, you know, future generations of people, because, you know, people were making the connection that, well, no, it's also the future generations of all life. We depend on them, and our future generation, you know, humans will also depend on it. So there was this kind of keen awareness of these different dimensions that supported connection. And I was looking for social norms, social agreements, things that people all accepted as normal that became sort of culture-wide or society-wide that supported connection, essentially. And I originally had tabulated 36 of them that we could use at events. But as our model grew to being based on 8 directional archetypes, we went to 64. And it wasn't that we added more from the 36. It was that I had tabulated hundreds of them, you know, and some of them were kind of only practiced here and there in different cultures. I was looking for the ones that were showing up consistently on, you know, multiple continents, essentially. In a way, what I was tracking was if everybody in the world was practicing this at one time, maybe before modernization, but if everyone was practicing this, is it a sign of something that, A, we all have in common that can bring more unity amongst people? B, is it a reflection of our ancient nervous system? Is it a reflection of our collective ancestors? You know, that maybe it's something that we all had in common at one point because we were all one people. And I just thought this could help. You know, if I'm going to be teaching, you know, nature connection to children, or actually engaging in facilitating nature connection with children, are there things that the community, the staff community, the volunteers, the families around the programs could begin to implement that would add more dimensions of connection? And the answer was yes. I mean, we started that in 1983. I was joined by an elder named Ingwe, who himself had grown up with San Bushmen and Akamba people in East Africa. He was of British descent, but he was adopted by the Akamba tribe and spent an enormous amount of time as a child with the San Bushmen. So he was very familiar with all of this, and he completely agreed that these would be wonderful things to add, you know, to our program design. Yeah, the results were immediate and very, very effective, and we built some really wonderful relationships around you, Aiden, when you were young, with these very cultural elements, you know. So I was originally I was working with Ellen Haas and Evan McGowan on Coyote's Guide to Connecting with Nature, and we wanted to put a chapter in on the cultural elements that were most commonly used, and these became the 64 cultural elements. And Coyote's Guide was already full. You know, there was like too much information, and if we added this, it almost felt like we were going to double the size of the book. So we decided, well, let's, you know, after, you know, we're done with Coyote's Guide and it's out there, let's do Coyote's Guide Part 2 kind of thing, and then we'll bring the cultural elements. And everybody kept asking, when are you going to do the cultural elements? You know, because we were teaching them at Art of Mentorings around the world, and people were thrilled to realize that we were applying these 64 cultural elements at these seven-day events, and nobody even noticed we were doing it. You know, because they're so easy to work with. You can even, you know, as people are signing in and registering for the event, you can, you know, have them draw a piece of paper out of a basket, which we always did, which told them, you know, what directional society they were part of, you know, which of the eight archetypal energies are they representing, and what working group are they in. And then we could actually distribute cultural elements out to these people who were just participants. And everyone loved saying yes and offering their best interpretation of how to apply that cultural element. So, you know, it was distributed throughout the whole camp. And of course, the staff were working with some of them, and volunteers and elders. And, you know, there was all different people holding different parts of that. But it made those events so incredibly connective and utterly transforming for people. So we really, really wanted to publish them, and we never got to. And in 2016, I was starting to feel like I think we should just, you know, my good friend Kaylin Kennett, who is one of those video producers, filmmakers, who when he's behind the camera and he's working with me, I don't feel him. He's such a, almost like he's practicing invisibility in nature. You know, he's just got this really low key presence, and it makes it really easy to feel safe with him. So I really liked working with him, and I had worked with him on a few projects prior to this. And I contacted him. I said, what do you think about, let's do 8 live audience events with 8 different Art of Mentoring communities, you know, on the West Coast. And he would drive his RV rig, which was set up as a mobile video studio, and he would meet us at locations. And my son Aiden would join, and he would provide music and facilitation. And, you know, we went to 8 locations. And it was the request that I made of the people who were going to host the audience event. The request I made was, can you invite people who are really curious about cultural elements, who really appreciate them, and who would want to be in an audience like this? You know, like I didn't want to talk to a cold audience. I wanted people who already had an affinity, who had experienced this, and who wanted to know more, and who wanted to support this project. And that was one of the funnest things I think I've ever done. Aiden, you know, what's your memory of that? Where did we go when we filmed these?
Well, first of all, I agree that was some of the most fun I have ever had, getting a chance to be part of producing these. There just really was something so great about connecting around these elements and the communities kind of building and rallying around them. So let's see, we had events. We had one down in Topanga Canyon. We had one in San Luis Obispo. We had one in Los Altos at Hidden Villa in the Bay Area. We had one in the East Bay in Oakland. We had one up in Marin County. We had one in Sacramento. We went all the way up to Salt Spring Island in Victoria, British Columbia, or near Victoria, British Columbia. And then we lastly had an event at Wilderness Awareness School in Western Washington. And yeah, it was really amazing to see how the communities rallied around the work we were doing. That was really, really fun.
Another thing that I've heard from people is that it's accessible in a different way. As you know, our focus is highly on nature connection, right? And this would be the cultural elements represent more of the people connection side of things. And so for an audience that maybe doesn't know that they're longing for nature connection, we've had the feedback that it's really accessible for a wide audience, because it's the history is so interesting, the stories are so good. And where, you know, a lot of people these days maybe don't resonate with the thought of nature connection, the cultural elements, right, the way that we connect with other people can be catchy for those folks. And I'm curious, John, you know, you spoke briefly about the inspiration for the videos. And I just wonder if you would say a little bit more about the need, right? What was the need that emerged for you that caused you to go on this research path? And you did say also that you saw changes happening for people. But I wonder if you would just divulge a little bit more on the impact that the cultural elements have, not only in communities and with individuals, you know, as human to human, but how does it also impact the depth of nature connection experiences?
Yeah, that's a really important question. That definitely shaped my thinking because, you know, my research at college started like when I was 19 in 1979, I knew I wanted to found some kind of a program in my community in New Jersey, Monmouth County, where I could do for the young people of my county what was done for me as a boy, you know. And that was because of my mentoring with my grandmothers, but also Tom Brown, who took it to a much, much deeper level. And, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I want to be able to do for others what these lovely people in my life had done for me. And, you know, what Tom was continuing to do with me, you know, I was mentored by him for 53 years, not continuously every day, but, you know, stayed in touch with him. And especially in the last 3 years of his life, really, we connected a lot about looking back over, you know, 50 years. And I kept thinking, well, I want this to be the most connective experience possible. I want it to be really fun. I want it to be really deep. I want people to, you know, feel seen and heard and understood and, you know, that they could really flower into the best version of themselves, you know, and how can we support that in many dimensions? And the reason I wanted to do this was because I grew up in a suburban community, you know, sort of a bedroom of New York City on the edge of wild land. So I had sort of two worlds. I had the wilderness around me, if you will. I had the wilderness of the Pine Barrens, but then I also had my suburban life. And I found, honestly, I don't think it was intentional, but I found that a lot of the interactions with people in my upbringing, you know, my friends, my peers, some members of my family, not all, that it was kind of disconnective and really kind of jarring. And then I'd have these amazing connective experiences with my grandmothers, my great aunt, my uncles, you know, then with Tom. And then I'd go back to the sort of everybody else and I would have this jarring, disconnective, it almost felt abusive kind of experience. And I noticed that all the people who grew up with Tom around me, who received his mentoring as well, all developed a keen, intrinsic desire to take care of the earth. Like they all did. Like, and it wasn't like an ideology, it was like coming from their heart. And I certainly felt that way. And then I noticed that the people who didn't grow up with Tom, they didn't have that care for the natural world. Even some of the naturalists at the park system that I worked with, they were, you know, they were knowledgeable, but they didn't connect with the children very well when we were doing programs. And they also strangely didn't stop the maintenance department from mowing down the stuff that the butterflies were depending on, you know? And I was like, why aren't they seeing this? You know, why isn't this important to them? I didn't have seniority and I was too young to have influence, but I complained about it. And they just kind of shrugged their shoulders, you know, like, oh, there's nothing we can do about it, you know? And I'm like, yes, there is. You know, so I was like, okay, so it seems to me that this connection piece is really important. And people don't know that they don't know about it. And that's kind of what I was seeing. So I'm like, okay, well, we're going to have to weave this connection stuff in and around our program activities. And, you know, work on things like the very first video in the series is greeting customs. You know, it's like, okay, the very first thing we do when people arrive is that we greet them. And if we greet them well, they're going to feel already, the connection is already forming because we were very present and we greeted them well. And then, you know, another one of them is like, hey, let's help them wipe off some road dust. You know, they had a rough day at school. Let's kind of shake that off, have a little fun, kind of get them present in the now. Gratitude is one of them, you know. So we started to weave these together as part of our program routines, and it had an immediate and powerful effect on the people present. So I realized that, wow, I used to think of it as like a box of Legos. You know, if you put all the Legos into, I don't know if you remember back in the day, like refrigerators used to come in cardboard boxes, and washing machines came in cardboard boxes, you know, so you have to picture this very large cardboard box. And just throwing all your Legos in that box, then the only Legos you're ever going to play with are the ones on the top, right? You're never going to pour that whole big box out. You're not going to reach down in and try to find a Lego. So you're just going to sort of limit your creativity and your ability to improvise with your Legos because of the way they're stored, essentially. And I started to think about these cultural elements the same way. You know, there's cultural elements that are designed for beginners and for children, and I put them archetypally together. You know, so greeting customs is in that first ring, you know, so ring one was sort of dedicated for beginning people, people who are new to this, and children. And then ring two was for those slightly older children who were more adventurous and sort of self-motivated. And that, you know, that also represented the mid-morning time of day, you know, so it's not quite the beginning of the day. It's a little bit into the morning when things are moving. So that would be ring two. And then we did eight rings. So like if you look at the eighth ring, you're now working with elders, you know, the spiritual advisors of the culture, the very, very elderly who are close to becoming ancestors, who are contributing this massive love and wisdom. But it's also the people who have been around, you know, the Nature Connection journey for so long that they've developed, you know, kind of mastery in certain areas of it. So you could see the, you know, it would be better to organize the Legos onto eight shelves, right? So you could access them. But then I was like, okay, well, now we need eight categories going across the shelves that are consistent on each shelf. So we had one collection, which was for people who are experiencing Nature Connection for the first time. And then we have a batch of stuff that's for the adventurous Nature Connection people who already have their understanding of hazards down and they know how to get around without getting lost. And then there's a section of the shelf for the people who are really focused on a skill or a technique. And then there was one for the people who are more into kind of the relaxation mode, the just sort of deep recreation or deep, you know, connection and healing. And, you know, that was the fourth category. And then across the shelves, you know, you go across, there's eight, right? So that's where the 64 comes from. But the 512, the name of it, references the fact that each of those eight categories on the eight shelves is divided into eight segments based on the same archetypes, based on learning style, based on particular personal preference of how you like to approach your learning journey or your experience journey. And so eight times eight times eight came up with what we call the 512 map. So now the Legos are all mapped out. And you're like, oh, I'm working with really advanced people. I'm going to pull the Legos from this shelf over here, you know, the seventh shelf up. You know, I'm going to be working with children this weekend. I'm going to make sure I front load cultural elements from, you know, shelves one and two. You know, so I had to organize it like that so people wouldn't kind of get stuck in a rut. You know, they might just get used to using three or four cultural elements as go-tos and then forget that there was all these other tools that they had that could really enhance and spice up and provide variety and excitement for their programs. And so technically the 512 project is based on just one of those learning styles, those strands, you know, those approaches. And it's the strand of social agreement, you know, like what do we do together as people? What do we do to recognize what was passed down to us from ancestors and wisdom keepers before us that we can incorporate now to pass for the future generations? So that's what we call the sixth strand or the Northwest strand in the Northern Hemisphere. But it covers all of the eight rings and it covers all of the eight big categories, which we call petals or sometimes shields. That's where eight shields got its name. But our goal was to, you know, just let's just focus on cultural elements, things that are kind of social agreements that we all create as ways of being together. You know, like let's be really conscious of greeting and let's really work on that so we don't leave people in the parking lot feeling like they're not welcome. You know, let's make sure we make space for wiping off road dust, you know, that kind of a thing. So, gosh, you know, like my favorite art of mentorings was when we knew that we had all eight rings, you know, all 64 cultural elements and all of the petals of categories of activities covered at an event and proved again and again and again that, you know, these cultural elements are indeed speaking to our ancient nervous system and people are being moved below their level of thought. It just, goes straight to their vagus nerve, you know, goes straight to their mirror neurons. And it just really amps up that sense of personal safety. You know, I feel seen, I feel heard and understood. You know, I feel like my contribution is being valued. I feel like I belong. And I think people hate it when the event ended on Saturday because the kids would get so mad that you finally figured it out, mom and dad, and you brought us to really nice people doing the things that we love. And now we have to go home, you know. So, you know, we over 40 years proved again and again that these cultural elements are highly applicable, almost, yeah, I pretty much would say in almost any situation, and that they can really enhance, you know, people's experience of any kind of an event, you know, like whether it's a wedding or a potluck or a workshop, you know, people build these into their families. I know people who built it into their organizations, you know, as managers, they began to run their departments based on, you know, several of these cultural elements. And all of a sudden they were noticed by the people in management saying, wow, your productivity of your team has gone way up and job satisfaction is really high. And I don't know what you're doing, but can you do this for the rest of the company? You know, so that kind of reputation started happening as well. So, you know, ancient tools, but highly applicable in modern times.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the things I appreciate the most about the 512 videos is that it is very natural on so many levels. You know, when you listen to the videos, the concepts just resonate, right? Because like you're expressing, John, they came from the research of, you know, natural culture, culture based on nature, culture that evolved over thousands, well, millennia, right? Hundreds of thousands of years. And so there's a simplicity in it, and there's an awareness, you know, that we tune into very naturally. And when we hear about the cultural elements, and then also the way that they are presented in story, right, which is a very natural way of learning instead of just hearing, you know, greeting customs are good, we should welcome people, to have it illustrated in a story really brings us into the felt sense experience of what does it really mean to feel welcomed, right, and to greet people in an authentic way.
Yeah, well said. You know, when I was creating these videos, I wanted to follow a template. I wanted to share how, for instance, does the San Bushman culture use this cultural element? So I chose 64 cultural elements that I saw and experienced the San Bushman using. And I hadn't yet, when I was doing my research in the late 70s and early 80s, I hadn't been to the Kalahari, but I, you know, got to read a lot about them through different anthropologists and also through reading the works of Lawrence Vanderpost and other authors who spent huge amounts of time there. But then I was blessed with Ingwe's company, you know, from 1983 on. And every time I mentioned a cultural element, he would tell me how the Bushmen, how he experienced them using it. And then in 2010, I started to visit the San Bushmen and was really delighted to see that they were still doing this, right? So I had a long time, many years of learning about how these cultural elements were being utilized in traditional cultural settings. And then I would say, here's the principle that makes this particular practice work for connecting. And so I would lift that up and out of that Bushman-specific application and then say, here's how you can apply it in modern times. In fact, here's how it's being used in the airline industry. And these are the results here, how it works very well in hospitality. You know, so I try to give a modern example so people can relate to it. And it's funny, Sarah, you always remind me of this, that my sister never really related much, right? She was saying at a family event, I never really, you know, relate so much with the nature thing you guys do, but I love the 512 videos. I can understand those, you know. Kim, you know, was not, we spent time with Tom. She got to, you know Tom, and our families were friends. So she, you know, we did have adventures, but she didn't go on a deep, you know, mentoring journey with Tom the way I did. But she really relates to the people connection stuff because she's great with people and she loves people and she loves hosting and she loves being part of events and things like that, and has, you know, as part of her career was in public relations. So she really could very much relate to these cultural elements, you know, and that says a lot, I think.
So, John, you described the kind of rings, right, of the 64 cultural elements. And I was just curious, because my sense when I look at all the different topics of each, you know, title of the 64 videos, I get drawn to particular places, and it's definitely not linear, right? Like that first ring, you kind of named it as beginner or child. Is there, you know, room for that flexibility of going toward where I'm called, and you know, maybe I'm an elder, right? And I've got a lot of cultural elements under my belt and a lot of experience with people. Those simpler concepts or elements in that first ring, I believe, you know, it circles back, right? Where it's maybe we do know how to greet, but maybe we can take it even further. And maybe, you know, we can greet people into a particular realm of life, but maybe we didn't consider how do we greet people, like to take them on a journey, on a learning journey, versus like coming over for dinner.
I think you've heard Elder Randy Walker speak about this, right? No matter how many times you work with these cultural elements, they just keep getting deeper over time. It's not like you ever feel like you master them. And of course, every situation, every setting draws out a different aspect of it, kind of. So I think, you know, greeting someone who's coming over for dinner is really different than greeting someone who, for instance, is like, I'm here at this tracking program because I really want to learn wildlife tracking and I want to go on this journey to become a wildlife tracker. We want to see that person's passion. We want to see their vision for themselves, the mission that they're on. And we want to welcome them to the program and recognize that we really see them. We really lift up that feeling that they have, and we want to help them. We're on your team. You know, we've got your back. We want to help you on this journey and stick with you as long as it takes, you know. Yeah, it's a very different application of the greeting custom, right? But it, you know, every situation calls for a different application.
Yeah, thank you. And if you were to recommend a place to start, is that possible for you? And if it's not, then you can just skip that question.
Well, you know, I think you were kind of hitting on it when you said, well, you know, maybe I'm in the elder stage of my life. And, you know, what do I want to look at on these 64 cultural elements? And maybe it is good to work right from ring one and just kind of experience it. Like, in a way, the way I think about ring one is, since all the children experience this, that means everybody in the culture has it embodied. You know, by the time they're elders, they're remembering back to when their grandmothers treated them this way, or their grandfather treated them that way, and how it made them feel. And they, you know, they become the best welcomers of all. You know, so even though I kind of look at ring one, ring two, ring three as the things that are ubiquitous that everybody would need within the culture to experience, for that culture to have cohesion and unity. And as you go deeper and deeper, you know, and you're up to ring six, seven, eight, you know, you're starting to be in the realm that is the kinds of things that the elders facilitated. You know, so I would think maybe look at it from what stage of life are you at, or what stage of life or stage of experience are you working with? You know, are you working with freshmen at the college? So then you would want to look at ring one, right? Or, you know, are you going to be working with little kids? Again, you'd look at ring one and ring two first. But I think that they all, you know, because they were sort of everywhere within the cultures, you know, they were like the air that people breathe, that they may not even know they're doing it. I remember when I was interviewing some of the San Bushman elders and I asked them why they did this or that, they would say to me, oh, because, you know, we want to make sure everyone feels welcome. You know, they would say instead, this is what my grandmother did with me. They've been in it and swimming in it, and they're unconsciously competent in it. So they're not thinking about how it solves a problem because they don't have the problem, because they're using the cultural element. So it's really interesting to have that experience and then come back to modern people and realize that of the 64 cultural elements, most of them are not exhibited. And when they are, they're sort of not done with a lot of competence, embodied competence, so they don't go over well. Like, people will say hi to you, but it doesn't feel authentic. And, you know, so it's interesting because it's more like these are tools to help us repair our culture. But we first have to kind of know what it could be like and then realize what's missing and then have the passion to want to play with these things, experiment with them, and see what we can put back that fits in the context that we're in. So I would say, watch them all. Of course, I'm going to say that. But it's sort of like, what did you say, Aidan? It's like 64 episodes of Seinfeld. You know, it'll take you a while. But they're all worth watching. And we have found, like, we did a Kickstarter back, you know, when we were just wrapping up the filming. And the only people who actually viewed the Cultural Elements videos were the Kickstarter participants up until, you know, recently. And when we looked at the analytics of how people were interacting with these videos, we noticed that people were watching them like dozens of times. They weren't just watching all of the videos. They were watching some of them over and over and over again. Well, I found that fascinating. It's like, okay, so there's something to learn. You know, you watch it once, it might inspire you. You watch it again, you hear something you didn't hear the first time. You know, and that's what I'm hearing from people. It's like, no, I keep watching it. Or because we also have the audio only track. If people want to just, you know, listen to it like a podcast, they can do that too. But yeah, I think the stuff has value. And I think it's like, you have to soak in it a little bit to kind of see how you relate to it and to get ideas about how you might want to work with it. I would say, you know, trust your intuition. You know, like Sarah said, she looks at the chart and your finger goes to different ones, you know. So we'll put that chart, by the way, below in the show notes so you can see the chart of the 64 titles. And that feels kind of like a fun reminiscence for me. And I hope that more people get to experience these videos, because we didn't create them to put them on a shelf, right? We created them so that they could help people. And we're only just now beginning to release them and distribute them some. So I think, Aidan, you have some ideas about that.
Yeah, we're going to include the audio from Greeting Customs, which is one of the Ring One videos from the 512 Project, at the end of this episode, so you all get a chance to listen to that. And we're also going to share a YouTube link of the same video, so you can watch the video if you're interested, and you can also share that with friends and family. And we also have some exciting stuff coming up in 2025 around ways that we can all listen to the videos and practice these cultural elements together as a community. So stay tuned for that. We'll be sharing more about that in 2025.
Great. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to go back down this memory lane and relive, you know, so much goodness from the actual filming and all the years of working with them. And really appreciate you, Aidan, and you, Sarah, for, you know, giving me an opportunity to tell this story. And thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Right on. Okay, so this particular element that we're talking about now is a cultural element, which is the most welcoming of all welcoming elements, because this Ring One experience is about welcoming, and this is literally called the welcoming custom or the greeting custom. So if you think about modern times, I grew up in a place where a greeting custom was don't say anything. Even if someone says hello to you, you can grunt and kind of give a quick nod, or not do anything if you choose, and that's okay too, right? So that was New Jersey, and that's, you know, kind of the greeting style. And hey, what's up? You know, or how you doing? And how you doing? Basically, you never actually answer that question. That's not the point. And if you actually answer someone when they say how you doing, they're going to just look at you like there's something really wrong with you. So, some of you might know that greeting custom. Which is the non-greeting. But I will say that a greeting custom is such an important piece. You know, when I'm with the San people, they're going to take a long time greeting you. So if I see them in the morning, they want every single person in their group to hold hands with and shake hands with every single person in the group that I'm with. And the way they do it in the community that I'm visiting, some Bushmen will put a hand under an elbow. These guys put a hand right about in the crux of the elbow, and they take your hand so gently in their hand. You know that whole thing about a firm handshake? They don't have a firm handshake. They hold you and meet you in the way that you want to meet them. So you actually feel them listening to your grip with their grip. You know, they're very conscious of what their hand is doing in your hand. And they hold it, and then they look at you, and they smile with their eyes, and they smile with their face, and they talk to you for a while in their language, and you don't understand anything they're saying. And they actually expect that you're going to do the same in return. So you just speak to them in your language. And you're essentially, the kinds of things that they're saying to you are, it's really good to see you. It's been a long time since we've seen you. We're really happy you've come. We're really happy that you brought your friends. We've missed you terribly. They often gesture to the sky, talking about the sound of airplanes flying over. And every time they hear an airplane, they think it's us and that they're really hoping that it's us, but it isn't. Then we're really sad. But so we're really thankful you've come. And they'll hold you and do this for a little while. So it might take 2 or 3 minutes per bushman to get through this. And if there's 35 of them, this goes on for a while. You know, I'm serious. You know this? And this is what we do before we get started. And then once that's done, then they want to sit in a circle with us. And then they want to hear from each person now in a circle. What's your name? Where are you from? You know, tell us something about your journey or your story. And then we all go around. And then every Bushman does the same thing. So we intermingle and we do this thing. So now we've spent essentially 2 hours greeting each other on the first morning when we see them. 2 hours. And then that's all that we have time for. And then we're really tired from that. And then everyone goes and has lunch, and then it gets really hot, and then everyone takes a nap because it's too hot to do anything. Then we get back together around 4:30 in the afternoon, you know, having not seen each other for a full, 3 hours. They have to greet you all over again. The only thing that's not going to happen now, they're not going to do that thing where we have to sit and tell a story to each other. So, you know, that's going to save a good hour now, but we are going to spend another 25, 35, 45 minutes greeting each other again as if we're just seeing each other for the first time. And the more I get to know them, the more I realize that whenever they come together as a group, they spend a lot of time greeting each other. And they make sure that every person has been properly welcomed and greeted by every person. And the little children who are really too young and too shy to be involved, you know, they're waiting their turn. And when you come by, they're kind of like turning away from you, but they're looking at you out of the corner of their eye. And then you might get one of these, you know, and they'll reach up and they'll touch your hand for a second and then they'll go, pull the hand back down. But even the young ones are doing it, you know, so the little ones, they don't expect them to. But there's a certain point at which a child starts to realize, wow, I should be part of this. And then they don't actually kind of force them to do it. So greeting customs are really important. And, you know, we think about, well, modern times, we don't really have time for greeting customs. You know, we got agendas, we got work to do, we got projects to complete. So in modern times, we sort of dispense with the greeting thing all together. And in so doing, we unconsciously shock each other into a sense of non-safety. So we're actually working against ourselves. And I was working with a McKinsey consultant for a number of years who was helping us with our strategic development plan, Peter Schlenska, and he basically was critical of the fact that we took so long at our meetings to do this thing that we did, you know. And he would say, wait a minute. He said, if your meeting is going to start at 9:30, don't tell me it starts at 9, because I get here at 10 minutes to 9 so that I can be here on time for the meeting to start promptly at 9. And I said, but you told us we're supposed to use our model to run our business. And he said, yes, I did say that. That's what you're supposed to do. And I said, well, that's what we're doing. Oh, nonsense. You're just disorganized. And I said, no, we're not disorganized. You know, he says, well, I waited for 45 minutes for this meeting to start today. Right? So I'm going to come next time 45 minutes later than you tell me if that's what's going to happen here. I said, but hold on. You told me we have to use our model to run our business if we're going to teach it in the world. He said, yes. I said, well, greeting customs is part of our model. And we learned about greeting customs not just from the San people, but from a lot of different cultures and the common elements of a greeting custom. You want to know what they are? Because this is what it's about. The first thing you do is you have a period of visiting. So people show up at the appointed place, roughly at the appointed time, and they visit with each other for a while. They talk to each other in the parking lot. There's always a snack table, a place to get, you know, water, people welcoming you, showing you around, doing stuff. And then people just drop in and have little conversations. And that can go on for a while. And I said, and we know, we were told by the elders we worked with the Tree of Peace Society, the Haudenosaunee people, Jake Swamp and his wife Judy, well, that visiting is really important. They call that phase wiping off the road dust. okay? Because you basically need to talk about how stressful it was to get here or what you had to go through in order to arrive or the problem. There's nobody room in the parking lot. And, oh, my God, you know, when I left to do this and that, you know, and people have the instinct to do that. Do you notice that? People have the instinct to tell the story of the road. And actually, that's an important thing for us to recognize. Let people do that. Let it come out because it's a form of processing that allows them to be present enough to actually begin connecting. So wiping off the road dust is that first part. And then the second part is when, you know, the people come in, they're shown where they can relieve themselves and get their needs met. That's another level of safety, because if no one sort of shows you where the door is to enter the place, or there's no one kind of, there's no signs telling you stuff, and you find yourself walking around looking for things and opening doors, oh, I'm sorry, wrong door. That's kind of awkward, right? It doesn't build safety. So think about what does build safety. You know, it's like when there's parking lot people who are like, hey, park right here. You know, this is where we're all parking. And where'd you come from? And hey, good to see you. You know, they're sort of moving the greeting custom along, right? Then they're saying, hey, just go up there. You see where that red sign is? When you get that sign, just turn to the right and you'll see the door. That's where everybody is. Just go right in. You know, doesn't that help you? Yeah. You know, this is called the art of hosting, right? Or hospitality. It, you know, you learn that if you go to school for hospitality, but it's not that common that people actually think that this matters. And it happens for weddings or it happens for special events. But really, we're neurologically hardwired for it to happen multiple times a day, no matter what the transition is. Our body wants it, right? So the next thing that happens is you get together in that group. There's a felt sense, and somebody who's paying attention to, you know, the social structures that are present knows when it's time to actually start. And a formal beginning of the actual start might be 45 minutes later, might be 35 minutes later. It depends on people's needs, ultimately. You can't say start it at 9:20, because what if people aren't feeling ready to connect at 9:20? You know, it's really the job of the greeters to make sure it gets to that place where it settles to a certain feeling, at which point it begins. And it always begins with some kind of greeting custom that fits into that slot. With the Haudenosaunee, you know, what we learned, what they call the words before all else, is the Thanksgiving words. So at the beginning of our gathering, the words are shared in a formal way and everything is acknowledged. And that's how they start. The same thing is true in most cultures. There's some kind of formal acknowledgement and gratitude thing that happens in the beginning. And then everyone feels seen, feels safe. They're like, okay, I'm here. I'm ready. So finally, Peter realized 6 months into working with us, he congratulated us because he said that it took us a while to get going. And he now realizes that the time we take, if it's a half hour, if it's 45 minutes, to get settled and to really get connected before we start, actually empowers the creativity of our team at a very high level. And he said that we compared to some of the highest management teams that he'd worked with globally in the way that we got things done, because we all felt safe, because we all felt heard, we all opened up and became our best. Right, so this stuff is not even at odds with modern needs. It actually really helps us, you know. We only have 30 minutes to be with a group of people, then you have to compress the greeting custom a little bit in modern times. There are ways to compromise this, right? I only got 30 minutes with this team, but I am going to take 5 minutes to greet in gratitude because that 5 minutes is well spent. When I first started looking at cultural elements, I was really wondering, you know, what is the value of this cultural element thing? Because if really what I'm trying to do is connect people to nature, then why the greeting custom, you know? But the thing that I couldn't ignore was that the Bushmen were doing this greeting custom thing. All the people that I saw on my top 10 list of who was most connected, they all practiced elaborate greeting customs. So I went to this high school, Christian Brothers Academy, which was my first project. And I was working with these high school sophomores in an after-school program. And Ingwe and I had spoken about it, and he was the co-founder of this project back in 1983. And I said, Ingwe, this greeting custom thing, we need to build it into the after-school program at Christian Brothers. And he said, yep. He said, the Akamba had a great greeting custom. You know, the Bushmen had a great greeting custom. I think that's a good idea. So we looked at at the elements of a greeting custom that I just shared with you. And I just presented them to these high school sophomores, and I said, can you guys come up with a greeting custom that takes about 5 minutes that we'll do every Tuesday when we meet, first thing when we gather? And it has to achieve these things. You know, it has to make you feel present. It has to make you feel safe. It has to make you feel grateful. What do you want to do with that? And then we'll go into whatever we're going to do for the day in this after-school program, which was a wilderness awareness school program. Well, they came up with these elements. They said, well, what we should do is sit in a circle so, you know, because they've been in classrooms all day, so they don't like the hierarchy and the feeling of the teacher-student thing. They wanted that not to be there. Even if I was coming to teach, they wanted me to be in the circle with them so that we were all equal. They wanted basically everyone to take turns saying hello, something they were grateful for from the day, something they really enjoyed from their day, and maybe something that was really challenging for them for the day. And that they all agreed that they would really be present to hear each other's stories. So they wouldn't be thinking about what they were going to say while that person ahead of them was talking. They would try to be as present as possible. Okay, so at first I didn't understand why this would benefit the Nature Connection journey for them. But a few months into it one day, I was sitting, listening to the greeting custom happening. And I had my eyes closed and my head down. And it got to be Ken's turn. He was 15 years old. He was number one in his class. And he said, he didn't talk for a minute. Like, so I was listening to voices, one right after the other. It got to Ken, and Ken didn't say anything. And there was this pause. And before I looked up and opened my eyes to see what was happening, tears started flowing from my eyes. But I didn't hear anything from him yet. But when I opened my eyes and looked at him, don't you know, his eyes are all red and there's tears coming down his cheeks. And I'm looking around the circle and several boys, this is a sophomore, all boys Catholic high school, super competitive in sports. This is New Jersey. This is not an open, warm, touchy-feeling community, okay? This is a very, you got to suck it up and show you're a man kind of place, okay? But there's several young men that have tears coming down their cheeks. Ken hasn't even spoken yet. I just want you to note that for starters. Then what happens is Ken begins to speak, kind of swallows his tears, and he says, I come from one of the best families, I'm told. I go to one of the best schools in the state and maybe the country. I might be the best student in my class, because he was number one, right? And he's talking about all the best things. He says, but you're the only people who see me for who I really am. You're the only ones who let me be me. And I love you all so much. I will forever be dedicated to this work that we're doing here. This is my favorite activity. This is the thing I'm going to give my life to. And today he's an environmental lawyer, by the way. And he's in his 40s, and he's very successful. And then I got it, because that boy was so connected to this group of kids, so connected to the experience, that he gave himself fully to it. Is there anything that you wouldn't accomplish at a much higher level if you gave yourself fully to it? Right? He was literally in love with the experience, and that was the result of the greeting custom. You know, nowhere else in his day did anyone greet him. No one else in his day gave him the space to say what was on his heart. And it was only through repetition, week after week, for 5-10 minutes to take the time to do this greeting custom, did he even tap into that part of himself to even be able to express it. But I also want to point out something to you, and that is that the tears were flowing before the words came out, and they weren't because of what we heard him say. There was a field in the room that was energetic that you would have to say is related to the connection thing, right? Because connection modeling follows its own rules. It follows rules of connection, not rules of cognition or rules of philosophy or ideology. connection has a field. It's an electrical field in the room. And the greeting custom is a way to mark the beginning of a container based on that. Okay. Greeting customs can be used in modern times in any setting, even if you have limited time. And I encourage you to work on that and see how you can improve that in your life, in your everyday life.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. If you enjoy this podcast, it would mean a lot to us if you would take a minute to follow or subscribe. Following the podcast helps us, and it helps you, because you'll never miss an episode. We'd also love for you to give us a 5-star rating and review and share an episode with a friend. To learn more about our current offerings, visit livingconnectionfirst.net. We'll see you next time.